have the President of the United States bring in who he considers senior advisors to talk about what would martial law look like if Trump was the leader of any other country and he did what he did, every American news organization would call him an authoritarian.
Welcome to episode 36 of Inside Without Now, a podcast brought to you by volunteers with Refuse Fascism. I'm Sam Goldman, one of those volunteers and host of this show. In today's episode, we're sharing an interview with Eric Bolaire, founder and editor of Press Run Media, discussing Trump's coup attempt and the role the press has played in normalizing this fascist regime's attacks on democracy. But before we share, I want to talk a little bit about Trump's unprecedented attempt to overturn the election and share a call from refusefascism.org with you. As we upload this episode, the first of 2021, there are 17 days that the Trump-Pence regime have left in office, and those 17 days present a continued real and present danger to humanity. RefuseFascism.org is calling on everyone in DC and everywhere to break the silence and spread the truth. Trump lost. Fascists, get out. Trump's unprecedented attempt to overturn the election is fascist and must be opposed. Biden won the Electoral College and the popular vote by more than 7 million. Election officials deem this one of the most secure elections in American history. Dozens of GOP lawsuits to challenge the results have been thrown out for lack of evidence. Yet, Trump persists with his lunatic claim that he won the election, escalating his attempted coup into a showdown and throwdown on January 6th, the date Congress should follow their constitutional duty and certify Biden's win. Trump has even inquired about the possibility of invoking the Insurrection Act to implement martial law. Now, at least 140 House Republicans have said they plan to vote against certifying Biden's electoral victory. Senator Josh Hawley announced he would challenge Biden's win in the Senate, forcing a debate on election fraud that never happened, casting Trump as a victim. And Ted Cruz leads a group of 11 senators vowing to reject the results unless a special commission conducts a 10-day audit. Meanwhile, Trump called his followers, the same thugs who vandalized Black churches and assaulted bystanders on December 12th, back to D.C. for a wild rally on the 6th. Trump calls it a protest, but let's call it what it really is, a Nazi rally filled with white supremacist grievances and dangerous verbal attacks on his political enemies, emboldening his base to fight for Trump with threats and acts of violence. This is unprecedented behavior for a sitting president. It has disrupted the peaceful transition of power, legitimized the lie of a stolen election in the eyes of many millions of Trump supporters, and mobilized white supremacist MAGA mobs to rampage, terrorize, and intimidate anyone who stands in their way. With these maneuvers, Trump and his goons have seized the initiative, dominating the airways, normalizing fascist lies, and setting the terms in the halls of power and in the streets. In the midst of all this, Trump is escalating the threat of military aggression against Iran, and COVID deaths are raging out of control. Whether or not Trump succeeds in overturning this election, his fascist movement is succeeding in tearing up the norms of government and growing a battled, hardened base, determined to fight forward. It is a profound problem for humanity that the millions who rightly voted against Trump have been silent in the face of this. Transforming this dangerous situation must begin now, through creative and visible forms of opposition that break down our isolation and passivity and build our strength for the enormous struggle ahead. These fascists will not just fade away on their own. As fascists converge on DC this Wednesday, January 6th, join others to say, "Trump lost, fascists get out." Put posters in your windows and around town and spread this message on social media. Hashtag Trump lost, hashtag Trump Pence out now. Saturate the streets with art and statements of love and solidarity for all those who are under the gun and targets of this hateful regime. And at 5 p.m. in D.C., bang pots and pans to drown out the fascist voices descending on their city. And be sure again to take pictures and video. Post on social media and tag at Refuse Fascism. We also call on organizations and individuals to reach out to us with your ideas, your fears and questions, your plans, and your willingness to dialogue and work together on transforming this situation. Acting together to stop a fascist America is still our urgent call, not just for ourselves, but for all of humanity. You can read this call to action and find printable posters, along with other resources for social media at refusefascism.org. Now, let's hear from Eric Bollert. All right. I want to welcome Eric Bollert to Inside Without Now. We're so glad to have Eric with us today. Eric is the founder and editor of Press Run Media, a proudly progressive critique of the political press in the age of Trump. And today we're going to get into his recent article written shortly before the holiday, "Trump Plots Martial Law from White House, The Press Shrugs." So thanks for joining us, Eric.
Oh, my pleasure.
I want to start with a quote that stuck out to me in your article you wrote regarding his request for martial law, his curiosity about it, I should say. It represents one of the darkest chapters in American political history, with the subversive act threatening to do permanent damage to our democracy. And I was wondering if you could just speak from your perspective, what do you see the damage of what some could say is just a conversation?
I think I said in that piece, it was probably one of the most bizarre meetings ever held in the West Wing in the White House of the United States of America. So this was right before the holidays. And every day since the election, sort of the pundit class says, oh, now he gets it. Now he gets it. If we go back to November 6th, 7th, and 8th, there are all kinds of articles saying, just calm down. He's going to blow off some steam. They're quoting Republicans saying, no one believes he's going to do this. You just have to let him get over it, as if running a democracy is some sort of group therapy session. All of that turned out to be wrong. Every single thing. He went to Georgia. He went to Arizona. He tried to do recounts. He brought in state legislators from Michigan. He demanded the governor of Georgia call a special session. So he did everything that nobody in the pundit class thought he would. So I just preface that because, again, sort of mid-December, those same people, those same news organizations were saying, oh, okay, he's calmed down. It's going to be fine until January. And then the New York Times reported he had Michael Flynn, his former national security advisor who got fired 8 days into his job back in 2017 for lying to the FBI. He had Sidney Powell, who is certifiably insane, clearly a QAnon supporter and booster. She's one of his election attorneys, who we thought he got rid of because he publicly distanced himself from her a couple of weeks ago, but she's back in the White House. Rudy Giuliani's on the phone. Supposedly the serious people, in this case is Mark Meadows and the White House General Counsel, were also in the meeting. Mike Flynn had been on one of the right-wing TV shows to the right of Fox News saying Trump has the power to call in the military. Trump has the power to seize those voting machines in the four crucial swing states. Trump has the power to redo elections in four states, all of which obviously is not true. There's nothing in the Constitution about redoing four states. So he was brought in on this Friday night meeting, and Trump basically, from what the reporting was, Trump said, well, tell me more about this martial law. Tell me more about sending out troops. Again, the reporting was it didn't go anywhere because the senior White House aide kind of quashed it. And I think even Rudy Giuliani didn't support it. But they went on to talk about other insane, outlandish plots. But to answer your original question, I mean, to have the President of the United States bring in who he considers senior advisors to talk about what would martial law look like in the United States, to even have his sentence, let alone a 10-minute conversation. The meeting apparently went for hours, devolved into shouting matches. But to even have a serious conversation about what would it look like if the military seized voting machines in Arizona? How do we do that? What's the logistics? I mean, you have to go back to the Civil War to really even come up with anything remotely similar to this in terms of undemocratic behavior, autocratic behavior. The meeting to me was just, he continues to shock and stun, even though he's got 25 days left in office. And to me, that meeting was just astounding and upsetting and historic and all of those things. And yeah, and it does put a permanent stain. Because for the last 6 weeks, it's just been open warfare on free and fair elections. We've never seen anything like this in American politics. And then that was the jumping off point for then discussing the media coverage of that meeting, which we can talk about.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that resonated, this is in many of your writings, but that over the past 4 years, it's the normalization. And you think that, you keep thinking that there's going to be like this red line.
Right.
That like, if he crosses that, okay, that's going to be when, if it walks like a duck, quacks like a duck, you'll call it a duck. But then that line gets crossed and more gets normalized. And so as hopefully and with all likelihood in less than 25 days, he will exit the White House. What do you think will have been the most egregious act of normalization?
Oh, good. Good question. There are too many. And because I've forgotten all of them, I go back and for research, sometimes I read my columns from 2018, 17. I think, oh my God, I forgot all of this happened. So I can only answer probably from the most recent. And this meeting is a perfect example. So they're discussing martial law. They're discussing seizing voting machines. New York Times, to its credit, broke the story about the meeting. New York Times put the story on page 18, and the military aspect, the martial law, the seizing voting machines wasn't in the headline, wasn't in the lead. The headline was about Trump might appoint Sidney Powell as a special counsel to look into fraud, voter fraud. A, there was no voter fraud. So why is New York Times mimicking Republican talking points talking about voter fraud in the election? That's a minor thing, but it really bugs me. There was no voter fraud in this election. New York Times should not be doing headlines about voter fraud unless voter fraud is in quotation marks because it's not a real thing. You had to get down about halfway in the article before you realized that they discussed martial law. The Washington Post the next morning, nothing on its homepage, nothing on the website about this meeting. And to me, that is shocking normalization. And what you described has been, to me, one of the hallmark failures of the press for the last 4 years is just that refusal to ring the alarm bell. And they should have been doing it in the spring of 2017. Instead, it's kind of this frog in the boiling water, or as you put it, that line that you think once it's crossed, banner headlines, screaming headlines, nonstop discussion, nonstop condemnation. Side note, when Bill Clinton was being impeached for his affair with Monica Lewinsky, nearly 100 newspapers in this country demanded he resign. Major newspapers, including the Philadelphia Inquirer, USA Today, not columnists, newspapers took institutional stances and said, Bill Clinton cannot serve as our president. He is unfit to serve. He lied under oath about the sexual act. Fast forward, none of those newspapers in 4 years ever demanded that Donald Trump resign because he was not fit to serve. To me, that is mind-boggling. I think to me, it goes to corporate cowardice. It goes to a press corps that either normalized him to such an extent that they didn't think he should resign, or they were just too intimidated by his bullying. But to go back to your question, you know, this whole martial law, it was a 2-day story. It was barely a 2-day story. I did point out in my piece, CNN, to its credit, I thought really hit it hard for days and days. I think they really understood. This is shocking. I mean, some of the MSNBC hosts as well.
they were the only source where I could find a banner on the screen that had those words.
That had Marshall on the headline.
Yeah, that was the only thing I could find.
You're right.
On regular television.
So to their credit, they seem to get it. Everyone else, again, some of the MSNBC hosts definitely talked about it. But it was not a 3-alarm, let alone a 5-alarm fire. It's just like it's Trump being Trump. And I get that in the summer of 2017, when he's making stuff up about tariffs and he's contradicting himself about the wall. We are so far beyond Trump being Trump at this point. Oh, and I pointed out in my piece, ABC News did an online piece, and they talked about this martial law as a scorched earth policy. That's how they described it. As I pointed out in my piece, so if Trump calls for Democratic officials to be arrested, is that scorched earth policy? Are we still going to stick to these kind of mainstream rhetoric when we're talking about a possible coup? We're talking about martial law and things like that? There's this resistance and reluctance to accurately describe his radical and dangerous behavior. And there's been that reluctance. You could go back to 2015 and through the campaign, but certainly since he was inaugurated.
One of the striking things that I think, I don't know tons of decision makers in the media worlds or anything like that, but you hear this narrative, like, as you said, Trump being Trump, yeah, or like the more popular now, but he couldn't get away with it.
Yeah, it's illegal.
And he couldn't get away with it.
Right, so everything's fine.
And you just, on one, it like hurts your brain because you think about how many illegal, couldn't get away with things he's gotten away with, where people have repeatedly underestimated him because he's a buffoon or whatever.
Right.
And meanwhile, he shreds democratic rights and norms. But on the other hand, they're failing to recognize that they're playing a role in normalizing what anyone can see is fascist behavior. Even if you don't say fascist, you would say fascist behavior towards the opposition, including unleashing people to threaten poll workers who aren't even political, you know, who aren't even the opposition.
Sure.
So I think it's an extremely dangerous point in time where the people who should be sounding the alarm.
Yes. Look, you know, coup was never used, martial law. They don't like to use fascism. They don't use. I did a column 2 years ago saying if Trump was the leader of any other country and he did what he did, every American news organization would call him an authoritarian. In the headline, in the first sentence, he's the textbook definition. But why? You can't call a white Republican male an authoritarian, even though he is. So there's this timidity. And your point was a good one when you started off about there's this idea, well, he didn't get away with it, right? He didn't overturn this election. You know, the system worked. Don't get so riled up. We're fine. And I've said since the election, imagine a slightly different scenario. Imagine if Joe Biden only won by one state. Imagine if he won Michigan by 5,000 votes. Does anyone think right now Joe Biden would be inaugurated next month? Absolutely not. Because the Republican Party, minus some state officials in Georgia, Arizona, otherwhere, DC Republicans absolutely got on board with this. They absolutely got on board with this idea that we will overturn elections. We will throw out votes. The lawsuits, that Texas lawsuit that over 100 Republican members of the House signed on, it was an attempt to throw out 20 million votes. I don't think people should feel that great that he didn't get away with it, because I think if it hadn't been a Biden blowout, if he hadn't won by 7 million votes, we would be on the precipice of a civil war at this point. We absolutely would. And that's frightening. And frankly, what's going to happen in Georgia? What if both Democrats win by 3,000 votes? Does anyone think the Republican Party is going to say, here, you get control of the Senate now? No, I certainly don't. So this idea, well, Trump's going away, we're going to go back to normal. This is the press perspective. The Republican Party is filled with serious and honorable men, and because it's mostly men. And once Trump leaves the stage, no, all these people signed off on the idea that votes can be thrown out if you don't like them. That is astonishing. That really wasn't the narrative for the last 5 or 6 weeks. That wasn't the alarm bell that I heard being rung.
I agree. I'm wondering what difference do you think it would have made had it been covered differently? Had you seen the headline that you suggested in your piece, Trump won't commit to a peaceful transfer of power, on every news? But what difference do you think that would have made?
Well, I think, unfortunately, we should have had a different conversation 4 years ago, right? This is the press corps that refused to call Trump a liar for 4 years. They had CNN, Washington Post, and others. They had entire teams documenting his lies. But the newsroom was told he can't call him a liar. Say he traffics in falsehoods. Say he exaggerates. They burned through the thesaurus for 4 years. So if we had had a conversation where Trump lies, Trump is a liar, if that was just our common discussion, as it should have been for 4 years, I think we would be in a different position. But to go to your point, I don't know what would have been different, but I wish we would have had a conversation. Trump attempts coup. Trump embraces martial law. Trump uses fascist rhetoric. These are all facts. This isn't overblown rhetoric. This is what he did. So why can't we just talk about it and not pretend that adults can't have that kind of conversation? But again, for the last 5 years, the press is much more comfortable with, oh, he's an eccentric businessman. Yes, some of the coverage as he went insane in November and December was tougher. There was more open acknowledgement that he was trying to steal an election, that he was lying. But frankly, all of that came about 4 years too late, I think.
Trump's whole campaign for the past 4 years, because it's just been another campaign, has been a campaign of disinformation, peddling sometimes outright conspiracy theories, totally divorced from any semblance of reality, which has taken on devastating consequences at a time of a pandemic. And time after time, you've analyzed that the press has been an essential player in normalizing and failing to say what it is, failing to name a criminal as a criminal. You kind of alluded to earlier why you think this is, but can you speak more to why do you think they've served this role and where that comes from?
So why the failure? The question is a good one. And I think there's a few reasons, kind of historic reasons. The conservatives have been attacking the press for 50 years, since Spiro Agnew. It was kind of Richard Nixon's hitman who would go after the press. And so they've been, the phrase is working the refs for 50 years, right? They've been complaining, usually about made up stuff, usually about ridiculous stuff. But it's no fun to be on the receiving end of those complaints, particularly in the age of the internet. It can be brutal. Liberal media bias carries, that accusation carries a lot of weight inside the Beltway. So that's kind of the background, and that's the arena that Trump arrived in. And the press has always been in awe of Republican hardball. Always. They really admire it. They think it's super savvy. Democrats are always kind of in disarray and herding cats, and they don't know what they're doing. Whereas Republicans are, again, super savvy. They're always outmaneuvering Democrats. That's the worldview of the Beltway press. And then Trump comes in. So Trump comes in, and it's just obviously this bully. You know, calls him enemy of the people, fake news, all that stuff. You would think on paper, the response would be to just knock that guy and give him a hard time and show him and get in a fight. But it was the opposite. I mean, there was a real fear about the Trump movement in the media. And when he won, news organizations convinced themselves they had missed this huge story. So we have to pay attention to all these Trump voters. And obviously, he's good for business. And so I think that did play a role. He's good for clicks. He's good for ratings. The press liked to cover Trump, but the press invented new rules for Trump. And perfect example, cable news decided every Trump White House press briefing had to be carried live and in full. Every Trump public utterance had to be covered live and in full. The idea that you cover the White House press briefing, every word of it, live on CNN and all, is treated as breaking news is unheard of. Media Matters did a study of Obama's last 6 months in office. His White House press briefings, not when Obama shows up and not when Trump shows up, his press secretary shows up. Cable news covered 6% of the Obama White House press briefings. Cable news covered, to this day, and for 4 years, covered every minute, every word, everything. Why did they create out of whole cloth this idea that every Trump utterance is breaking news and must be broadcast to the nation? Well, the media convinced themselves Trump is this phenomenon. He's not just the president. He is a cultural phenomenon. Turns out his ratings aren't very good. When he does primetime news interviews, the ratings aren't any good. His State of the Union, his ratings weren't especially higher than anyone else's. But the media convinced themselves this is, again, he is a cultural phenomenon. We have to cover him like we've never covered another president. So when he came in, then there was all kinds of new rules, and a lot of them worked to his benefit. And then we got to the COVID, as you talked about. He started having these COVID briefings at the White House. People have died from those because of what they saw during those briefings. Fox News viewers, tens of thousands of Fox News viewers have died because of the misinformation and because of what they saw at those briefings. And the news organizations knew it. They knew when he started talking about drinking bleach everyone in the news business knew they should not be airing that stuff live, and none of them would turn it off. So they became addicted to this stuff. They became addicted to the ratings if they did provide a boost, and they became addicted to the fear, kind of a Stockholm syndrome, where they just could not stand up to their abuser, and they ended up enabling the abuser.
That's a helpful transition, that term, to my next question. The Trump presidency regime, as I call it, has in many ways, unfortunately, proven as a rehabilitation of the Bush administration, where people almost longingly look to, and I don't want to make any assumptions about your views or anything, but Bush was a war criminal. And right. There's adoration that ekes through the press coverage of Bush too, in a way that it wasn't done when he was president. I'm not saying that the press was super harsh on him or anything, but it is done with nostalgia. And I'm wondering, what are your thoughts on what Trump's coverage will be post his all likely departure from the White House? What should we be expecting from his coverage? Should we be concerned that he'll get the same treatment?
Yeah, I'm not optimistic. I mean, they ought to essentially pull the plug, but I don't think they will. If he's openly talking about running in 2024, they're massively impressed by his money and this base. The press has been overly infatuated with white working class voters that vote Republican for the last 4 years. If you go back to Barack Obama, 3 months after he was inaugurated, what was the biggest political story in America was the emergence of the Tea Party. And that was just treated as these people hate Democrats. And that is a huge story. I think we might see a repeat of that. I don't think if Trump is on TV or whatever he's doing on Twitter and making outlandish claims, I don't see the press is ever going to walk away. One good ray of hope is he might not have a Twitter account. Twitter for 4 years twisted itself into pretzels to make sure they didn't have to take away Trump's Twitter account, even though he violated terms of service every day for every 4 years. If you and I did two of his tweets,
we would be deplatformed, yeah.
We would, and if we were ever let back, it would be 3 or 6 months. They were obviously terrified, total corporate cowardice. So they came up with this ridiculous new category. Well, world leaders. Well, world leaders, we can't touch. So we have to leave those up. We have to know what they're thinking. And then at the end, during like COVID, and they started labeling some. Anyway, he's not going to be a world leader. Maybe they'll twist themselves into pretzels again and come up with a new category just for Donald Trump because he's got 80 million. But in theory, if he keeps doing this, he won't have a Twitter account. Again, I'm not optimistic because I think they'll just come up with another ridiculous corporate speak reason why they're going to let him keep doing it. I think everyone in the news business knows how they should treat Trump when he leaves. I'm not especially optimistic. It's going to happen. And I think he's going to be a looming presence and they're going to run to him every time Joe Biden opens his mouth.
Let's talk briefly about January 6th. You spoke about the press's infatuation with Trump's base. January 6th, supposed to be just a day of formality, the day the electoral vote count goes to Congress. But you have Trump calling for wild protests. You have Trump equating his fiction of a stolen election as an act of war and calling people to be in the streets on January 6th. What stories do you think we should be seeing right now? And what questions should we be expecting the press to be asking?
Well, I don't know. At this point, you almost just wish they would just ignore him. It's not possible. I mean, he's just this, I don't know what the right analogy is. He's like this wounded animal. I mean, he's just flailing around and he's just doing damage to the country and democracy and free and fair elections. He had this facade for a few weeks of legal challenges, and obviously that's gone. I mean, the good thing would just be just ignore him. I mean, but the press has never been able to do that for 4 hours, let alone 3 or 4 weeks. And if he's calling for basically insurrection, then that should be a news story on the front page. And you should use the word insurrection, just like you should have used the word fascism and coup and authoritarian and liar and racist and mentally unstable, all those words that you can't even argue with at this point. And they were all locked away under key because you can't say that about a white Republican male.
My last question for you is one that I think more people should be asking themselves and each other is, what role can people living in this country play in impacting the way that news gets covered?
Well, I talked about, you know, working the refs, and conservatives have done that for 50 years. I think they've done it wildly dishonestly. So I've never wanted liberals and progressives to attack the press just for the sake of it and do it with malice and make stuff up. But they do listen, and they do hear pressure, and they do hear, when they do hear from readers and listeners and viewers and things like that. Social media, Twitter, and other ways makes it very easy to communicate with journalists these days and editors. Most people aren't sitting down and writing a letter to the editor anymore at the newspaper. But there are ways to communicate, and they get it, and they hear it. And if you do it in a smart, respectful way, and so they understand, oh, this person's, they're not just some wild right-wing partisan and parroting fake news stuff. They have legitimate beefs. And I tweet about the New York Times a lot, and I can't even count the people who say, I cancel my subscription. I mean, obviously, the New York Times is doing fine, but, you know, you can always vote with your pocketbook, and you can vote to support media that you think are doing a better job and being more truthful and more honest.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us and having a conversation that more of us should be having, is what keeps a democracy running, and what should we be hearing, and what should we be amplifying or not, as the case may be. Listeners can find Press Run Media at pressrun.media, and you can follow Eric on Twitter at Eric Bolaire. And I want to thank you for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to Inside Without Now. If you appreciate what you hear on this show, make sure to subscribe for the latest. And please rate and review on Apple Podcasts to help us reach more listeners. Join us this Wednesday, January 6th. All over DC, signs reading "Trump lost, fascists get out" should go up. If you know someone in DC, call them and urge them to post one. In DC, post one in your window. Ask your neighbors and friends to do the same. Then at 5 p.m., bang pots and pans out the window, off your balcony, or on your front porch. No matter where, whether you print a poster out from refusefascism.org or create your own, take a picture, take a video, post on social media, hashtag Trump lost, hashtag Trump pens out now, and tag at refusefascism. Go to refusefascism.org for materials for the January 6th poster campaign. Special thanks to Richie Marini and Lena Thorne for helping produce the show. In the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. Trump Pence, out now. Stay safe, not silent, and I'll see you in the street soon.